Good morning. Welcome to this Monday, the 30th of June, and our panel discussion for this morning. We welcome you and do hope that you had a lovely weekend and that you will join us this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Newsman Ray Graff is here. Good morning, Raymond.
Good morning.
And the ever-smiling, but now it's even cleaner and gleamer.
What does that mean?
Mike,
straight
Mike,
from a dental...
Oh, good for you.
It just it had a cleansing it? Just moments ago.
You got to watch them when they do that.
Good morning.
Good morning, Michael. Thank you very much. And also joining us this morning for a moment or two, we have our engineer, Pat Cooney.
Vice President for Engineering and Other Things.
Operations, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it correct? Correct, yes. Mm-hmm. And so if you've been hearing, we wanted to just spend a minute or two on this because you may have been hearing the announcements that we've been making on the radio station over the last couple of days about a pirate radio station, which brings up a couple of issues. But what we have found is that some people have been complaining that when they turn on the radio and they expect to hear WAMC, they're hearing something else.
Including obscenities and other things.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So what is the situation, Pat Cooney?
Well, there's a small pirate radio station on the air. We've asked our friends in the engineering world to take a look at it. It seems to be coming from downtown Albany. It's on 89.7 FM. And it seems to be getting over into Troy and all the way up to 155 in Colony. So it's localized here, but it is interfering with our ability to monitor our own station here.
And, Patrick, if I can get this straight,
sure.
Interfering with the people who own that actual frequency, Union College.
That's correct.
Union College is the real offended party here. We've been affected, but it's on Union College's frequency.
That's correct. And I actually called up Dr. James Hedrick up at the Department of Electrical and Computer Engineering, who heads up their station. And they also sent a letter off to the field office in New York to notify the FCC of the interference.
Yeah.
So when you, what did you say, 89.7? So, but that will then bleed over to 90.3? Is that the problem?
It is. The pirate stations obviously are not legal, and they're not legit in any way, shape, or form. They don't hold a license. And what they're using is frequency agile transmitters, which can drift. And what's happening is, even though they're on 89.7, because they aren't required to check all these engineering particulars.
So in other words, frequency stability and spectral
right.
purity so that it doesn't, it's not
drifting.
Too wide of a signal.
It's
and
drifting,
such.
Correct. We discovered this when we turned our 90.3 signal off for tower work.
And yeah, they were.
There they were, coming through all of our speakers in the building. It was amazing how clear it was.
And they get away with murder because you're not allowed to obviously use profanity on the air, and they do. And we've had complaints about that.
We have indeed. We have indeed.
So what do we do?
Well, right now, we've put a complaint in to the FCC. The FCC has us behind at least 12 other pirate radio stations. They insist that there's at least 100 of them on in New York City Metro alone.
Wow.
So we're on a waiting list. And it was our hope by putting the promo on the air that if we had some notes, letters, and comments from our listeners and
who had been affected, yeah.
Right, that we might get bumped up the list due to the support of those listeners backing us up and
because we don't want to let our regular listeners down, who are being subjected to not having their radio station and having these folks.
And as many people know, our signal is a little sketchy in certain parts of Albany, depending on where you are, which is why we have AM 1400, which is a viable option for some for now. But we're hoping to get this guy off the air.
And by the way, it's not everybody by any means.
No.
I don't want everybody to think that if you turn the radio station on, you won't get it because, I turn the radio station on all the time and they're not there.
Right. This is a very isolated area right here in the city of Albany that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So this is different than what, because pretty much all I know about pirate radio I learned from Pump Up the Volume.
I don't know that movie.
The movie with Christian Slater?
No.
All right.
No,
me neither. And I think there was the Philip Seymour Hoffman movie, Pirate Radio.
Oh, yeah, there was.
Yeah.
They were on a ship.
Yeah, they were on a ship. That's
one.
Right.
That's what you want.
Yeah, you want to go on the ship.
Absolutely.
Take this.
And what will happen? They'll if the FBI comes knocking on the door, they'll confiscate their equipment.
The FCC will confiscate the equipment. They'll be issued a $10,000 fine.
Yeah, but which, you know, how many billions of dollars are owed to the federal government from that never get paid? Good luck, Charlie.
We just want them off.
Yeah.
Okay. So people can, they can call you?
They can. They can. They can call me here at the station at 800-323-9262, of course, extension 101.
Yeah.
Or you can email me, pcooney, P-C-O-O-N-E-Y, at WAMC.org.
All right. So do that. And thank you very much, Pat, for explaining. I appreciate it. Very
You're
nice
welcome.
To have you here, as always.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get to the news items of the day. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting An Evening with James Taylor and his All-Star Band, Sunday, July 20th at 8 p.m., bethelwoodcenter.org. Sunwood Builders Amherst, over 20 years of green and custom home building, offering home remodeling services and energy retrofits, working to save energy while maintaining design features. Sunwood-builders.com. Water Furnace Systems, supporting Green Hill Contracting on providing net zero energy homes in New Paltz, New York. Houses and custom design options available. NetZeroNow.com. And Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Sciences, offering undergraduate and graduate programs in a range of health-related fields, acphs.edu.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. I like that. What was that? Cut copy. Circa what year? Is that current? I like that.
2010.
Yeah. All right.
Well, good for you.
It had an 80s feel to it.
Sure.
As Ray said, good for you. I didn't like it.
I thought it was upbeat. It was good to dance.
Yeah that's right. Absolutely.
I don't dance. Can't make me.
I won't dance. Don't ask me.
Good morning. Welcome, everyone.
Well,
all right.
There's still a lot of time left. Rats.
We're, you know, I think the big story today is going to be the Hobby Lobby decision, and we will probably not know that from the Supreme Court until 10 o'clock, so we'll probably be off the air, and we'll talk about it tomorrow. But if it does come out sooner than that, we'll let you know. Meanwhile, President Obama today intends to nominate Robert McDonald, a former chief executive of Procter & Gamble, to be the next Secretary of Veterans Affairs. A White House official said made the announcement on Sunday, betting that a global corporate officer can turn around a government health system that has been rocked by allegations of mismanagement and cover-ups of long patient waiting times. The president last month accepted the resignation of Aaron Shinseki, the retired four-star Army general that he tapped in 2009 to lead the agency, by appointing Mr. McDonald. The president is turning to an outsider to overcome deep bureaucratic problems and the mismanagement that stemmed in part from a surge in the number of veterans needing care. And it is fascinating that when government goes to big business to try to solve some of their problems.
Are you looking at me?
I was.
Well, if one were to take a look at the whole situation, you would get the idea that the president knew that there was real systematic trouble here. His own White House group said so. He, for want of a better word, he did what was right. And in other words, he did what was right. Shinseki goes. He gets a guy who the Republicans are likely to approve of, who is, a senior capitalist in the country, and say he's going to bring in his business acumen and reform the system. But of course, it's going to take a lot of money to do this, because we not only have people who are who are in the system now and overcrowding it, but we have a hell of a lot more who are going to need it. And so now politics versus doing the right thing hits the road. Will the Republicans in the legislature, in the Congress, support him and give him the money he's going to need in order to make this right? Or will they do it as one more way, to politically challenge him? So what I'm thinking is that the president is doing the right thing. He's bringing in a guy who is obviously has made his creds in doing senior management, worldwide senior management, and deserves a lot of credit for doing it no matter what had happened before, because after all, he was not totally responsible for everything that was gone on up to that time, although I have made the point again and again, this is now his watch.
And the buck stops you know where.
Yeah, that's why I said it anticipating the...
Somebody would say that.
No, that you would say.
All right, fine. You know, McDonald, however, and yes. Sorry for saying you know to the gentleman who's counting it.
Yeah.
That's twice now.
Yeah.
McDonald, West Point grad, military service record. So it would seem
he seems like the dream candidate if you're looking for all of those, military experience, if you're looking for...
Yeah.
And it will go...
Management experience.
The Republicans will go along because he's a big campaign contributor to Republican candidates like John Bonner. He gave a lot of money to Romney's election bid. So he gives... it looks like he'd be a slam dunk to get approved quickly, given his corporate background, his West Point background, his... Republican campaign contribution background.
And it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. And it was shrewd of Obama to do that, turn to the private sector where you have to apply, you were saying.
It's also shrewd because if he fails,
right. He
is a major donor to the Republicans. And
well, we tried one of your guys and it didn't work.
And guess what? Right, he couldn't do this.
No. That would be cynical to suggest that.
No, I think that is cynical.
Really?
I think that is cynical. And I think it's... thinking a step too far.
Really?
Yeah. You really think they're sitting up there in the burning the midnight oil in the White House, chief of staff and all, saying, if this fails, it's on them.
Elections coming up, and that wouldn't be the first time such a thing has happened.
But it does show him reaching across the aisle somewhat, and picking somebody who is not like a policy wonk that came up through maybe liberal circles. By doing this, I think it does demonstrate a broader approach to it, and hopefully it will... achieve what's necessary in the VA.
And always brilliant analysis, Michael. As always. And are you
was
saying,
that a shot?
Yes, definitely. You know what? And I was going to say, and that was a shot.
All right, it's only Monday. Come on, man.
All right. With that under our belts, yes, with that shot, we will
shot
move
from
on.
Guns.
What?
What was the cereal? Was it Quaker Oats?
Yes, Puff Wheat. Puff Wheat and Puff Right.
Yes,
Puff
from
Rice.
Guns.
Yes.
Gotcha.
1812 Overture.
Right. Hit the dump button, will you, Joe? We'll just excise that 8 seconds. But they don't have a dump button on pirate radio.
Evidently not.
They don't need one.
After a potential opening last week to ease Afghanistan's political crisis, the presidential candidate Abdullah signaled on Sunday that more deadlock was ahead, promising again that he would not accept any decision made by the country's election commission after the panel rejected a list of his demands. From today onward, we reject all the decisions and activities of the Independent Election Commission, which will not have any legal value anyway. In the 2 weeks since the presidential runoff vote, the election process has been shadowed by accusations of fraud and conspiracy, with the Abdullah campaign accusing a range of officials all the way to the presidential palace of rigging the vote against him. There have been dramatic protests flooding the streets of Kabul and secretly captured phone calls that allegedly show election officials conspiring to rig the race. Two things that come to mind when reading this. First of all, thank God this couldn't happen in our country. And
certainly not.
That's good. But it has been so long, several weeks now, months, since the original election, and here we are still looking for some stability, which, Mike, I think is fascinating as the UN tries to figure all this out as well.
Hmm. Well, we are getting out of Afghanistan, last I heard, and this is a, I guess this is a perhaps effort to leave it in better, perhaps a better situation than the vulnerability that we may have left Iraq.
Is there anybody in this room who believes that this Afghanistan, yeah, it's true that we, as Joe just mentioned, that we have had our own issues. We did it in Illinois when Kennedy was running. There's been accusations made about the mayor, the mayor.
Mayor Daley in Chicago, getting a few extra votes for the presidential candidate Kennedy.
Not closing the counting until he, quote,
all the dead people that voted.
Saw what he needed. Mm. And then also, of course, the famous election with hanging chads and the rest of it, in which Al Gore probably won, but
can there be a truly fair election in a place like Afghanistan?
Yeah, I was just going to say, if anybody in this room thinks that it's going to be a fair election, please raise a hand. And one of the things that I found fascinating about this was that I didn't know who the institutional people, the outgoing president, everybody else were for. It was clear by Abdullah coming along and saying he doesn't trust the thing, that we now know it was the other guy, not him, who they wanted elected.
So you have to wonder where we go from here on this, and at what point, if any point, do we get involved more than we already are?
We're not going to get involved, and it looks like a corrupt election, and it won't be the first corrupt election around the world, in which, we have to sort of live with the results. Everybody knows enough to have elections, but then after you have the elections, do you rig them? We've seen a lot of that. Fascinating story this morning on NPR about the folks in Hong Kong wanting a chance to democratize, so that right now the party picks the candidates, just like Mrs. Blofeld used to try to pick the candidates at junior high school 118. And I wasn't one of them. But we fought them, and the people of Hong Kong are fighting them. Whether or not they kill them for it is another story.
Maybe you ought to run in Hong Kong. Is Blofeld still around?
I have no idea.
Stability in Afghanistan does sound like only a temporary situation,
right?
Just based on their past 30, 40, 50, 80 years.
Yes, for a long time.
But it's just a continuing step forward trying to get there.
Well, you're a glass half fuller. I'm a glass half emptier. Mm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You sound almost
hopeful that at least something good will come of this, and you're maybe less hopeful that this is just another
place for us to give $1 trillion to.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will tackle a range of other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. That is the address. Alan will read some letters when we get back. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we will return after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable program for this Monday, the 30th of June, the final day of June. We should note, tomorrow will be July.
Yay.
Yay. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. President Obama announced over the weekend that he will ask Congress to provide more than $2 billion in new funds to control the surge of illegal Central American migrants at the South Texas border and to grant broader powers for immigration officials to speed deportations of children caught crossing without their parents. Mr. Obama will send a letter today to alert Congress that he will seek an emergency appropriation for rapidly expanding border enforcement actions, as well as humanitarian assistance programs to cope with the influx, which includes record numbers of unaccompanied minors and adults bringing children. I have to say that one of the things in watching television coverage of this story is that amount of kids is unbelievable. That are coming in by themselves, and it's really it's stunning.
May I ask a question about this?
Yes.
Is this a new phenomena, or is it just a phenomena that's getting more attention?
Well, I don't know, but I think if we're to believe what we read in the press, it's new and it's
expanded rapidly. Yeah.
Then, well, the question is why it has expanded.
I know why.
How. All right.
I know why. Oh, I know. Can I go, teacher?
Yes.
Okay. So, the reason is that the United States, no matter what anybody tells you, is still one of the great places in the world that somebody gets a break. Along comes, right? Do you all agree?
I think it's a place of opportunity.
Yeah, it's a place of opportunity.
Well, but you look theoretically, it was a great place 3 months ago or 6 months ago. Why now?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Why
no,
so
I know
many?
Where you, I know where you go. Because the Republicans are blaming the president and the Democrats who have created this pathway to freedom that they think ought to be done and particularly helps young people who are here at, quote, by no fault of their own. Now, I happen to love this president on this issue because I think he's exactly right. His heart is in the right place. He's sympathetic. Nevertheless, what happens is you're in a Central American country. You don't have a toilet. You don't have a light bulb. And your parents are saying, if the best thing I can do for this kid is to get him via coyote or anybody else transporter over the border, I will have given my child a chance to do okay in life. And that's what's happening because there is a perceived message out there that now that children will be treated differently, that it's a better time to come. Is that what you were looking for, Ray?
Yeah, I think that puts it in context. Yeah.
You thought we were going to have a fight about that, didn't you, Ray?
No, not at all. I'm genuinely curious as to why all of a sudden, if in fact, as Mike accurately questioned, is this a new phenomenon? And if it is, why all of a sudden, unless it was some sort of a concerted effort, either on the south of the border or north of the border, to allow that to happen?
So what we always see in these situations is what we can only call, you know, unforeseen consequences. The president tries to do the right thing. It's popular with the Hispanic community in the United States. And we saw what the fallout was in the presidential election. And yet, here comes everybody. So now the president goes to the Congress and asks for what? How much, Joe? Do you remember?
$2 billion.
$2 billion to help. Because after all, some kid arrives here. What are you going to do with him? Just take them by the scruff of the neck and throw them back over the border, particularly since many of these young people are not from Mexico. They're from Central American countries. So now you have to figure out a whole new strategy to do that. And in the meantime, you've got to set up what we see around the world, camps. I mean, places that you're going to put the children until you can figure out a mechanism for sending them back.
Right, and speeding up the deportation process seems to be the key to this particular funding.
And we don't know if that'll work. You know, the idea that, you know, you get, okay, so you catch them, back they go. What, you think that stops it? We know that it doesn't.
What's interesting is that 2 points that you made, which I think really helped me understand it better, were that this is desperation on the part of families in El Salvador, Honduras, sure, and Guatemala who see the opportunity for their children, if not for them, for their next generation to succeed, is to get them over the border and get them into the United States, where there's a new signaled forgiveness, perhaps, of children of immigrants being in the U.S. and that, you know, Dream Act, et cetera. We want to give them, you know, more leeway because they're here, not on their own. So if parents are able to pay a mule or somebody, you know, to smuggle their kids across the border successfully, they have done their part to ensure a better opportunity for their children. But, you know, President Obama over the weekend was directing his comments at parents in Central America, talking about their own obligations for their children and how risky this is. Children can be exploited. Some children may die in the process. Sure. And is it really to take that kind of a risk with your own children? And maybe the, you know, people will always take a step back and say, if we could better work with our neighbors to the south, where we can improve the economy, and you know that was what the North American Trade Act was supposed to do. Perhaps it would equalize things so that they wouldn't be in such desperate states in Central America and do anything they can and take enormous risks to get into the United States.
Well, clearly, the answer to your question is yes, but reframing the question, which is this worth the potential harm that will come to a child? To those folks, I think what we're seeing is yes.
We would welcome, we do welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. When we come back, we will talk more. We have many other stories to get to. And again, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Berkshire Co-op Market, Great Barrington, offering organic and local groceries, working to build a healthy and sustainable community. Berkshire.coop. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, offering residential and commercial plumbing and drain cleaning services for sinks, drains, faucets, toilets, water heaters, and septic systems, thehudsonvalley.mrreuter.com. Arts Mid-Hudson, a sponsor of County Players Falls Theater and Wappingers Falls, presenting the musical revue Broadway, Big Band Style, one weekend only, July 11th, 12th, and 13th, countyplayers.org. And Capital Cardiology Associates, introducing enhanced cardiac access for same-day assessment and treatment of patients with active cardiac symptoms, including chest pain, shortness of breath, and palpitations. 518-292-6090.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. You have a few letters on the new head for the VA.
Regular correspondent Gary from Woodstock says, gentlemen, the problem with the Veterans Administration isn't who is the director. The problem is a lack of funding by our government. When 23 American vets commit suicide daily and 75% of the homeless population in America are vets, by the way, I'm just reading his letter. I don't know if these statistics are correct. We must demand that our young men and women be treated as vigorously as we treat them when we send them overseas. Perhaps the private contractors and military-industrial complex, such as Halliburton, Brown & Root, General Dynamics, and Blackwater, who make billions off the blood of our youth, should be required to donate, in capital letters, to a veterans' health care fund. But don't hold your breath, since these same companies don't even pay taxes. Their offices and banks are generally overseas, and that's from Gary. Did you want to respond to that, Ray?
No. Well, no, except that we'll see how a reorganization and perhaps proper management. I mean, they pull in $154 billion. Not saying that's enough. Gary might be right. Maybe they need more, but we won't know until it's properly run.
Well, that's true. But we do know that it isn't properly run, and we do know that people are lined up and aren't getting
Absolutely.
Help.
Absolutely.
Okay. So from Nick, I would like to comment that now that there is a universal health care in the U.S., that there is less need for veterans' hospitals. I think that our health care for veterans should be rolled over to existing hospitals, and that would result in better care for veterans. I would also like to suggest that this new administrator, with this in mind, is already thinking of downsizing the VA. That's from Nick. And I think, Joe, that's it.
Yes, it seems to be. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. Go to Mike Spain now. And there was an oil spill on Sunday in the Port of Albany, and the county a little upset because they weren't notified.
Yeah, notification is required, but not by law to the county. Last month there was a spill in south of Albany, and the the company that had the spill did not report in time. That was Canadian Pacific. They were fined $5,000 by the State Department of Environmental Conservation for not reporting. Anyways, this 100-gallon spill that happened at the Port of Albany on Sunday was regarded as a small, very well-contained spill that was cleaned up quickly and did not damage the environment. It was nowhere near the Hudson River. It didn't get into the water or groundwater or anything like that. But it just comes at a time when a Massachusetts-based company that does business at the Port of Albany, Global Partners, is planning to expand its existing complex there so they can bring in more crude oil by rail and then ship it down the Hudson River on ships. And that has a lot of people nervous. And just in 2012, a ship full of crude oil was heading south from the Port of Albany, and it ran aground just south of Albany, and the outer hull was damaged, but the inner hull was not, thankfully. But that had 12 million gallons of this North Dakota crude oil on it.
More than 100.
Yeah, a lot more than 100. And it was very close to have been a major catastrophe in this region in the Hudson River. So, you know, people's concerns are being echoed by, people's concerns are being carried forward by the political leaders. You know, the county executive, Dan McCoy in Albany County, put a moratorium on a plan to put a heating facility. What they want to do is bring in this very thick crude oil from North Dakota, take it off the trains and heat it so that it can be flowed and eat more easily onto tankers and taken down the Hudson and out to refineries. But as they do that, people in Albany are concerned. Of course, there's just 1 year ago in Quebec, there was a disaster where more than 40 people died because a train full of crude rolled down a hill and went into a populated area, and there were several explosions and a big fire. And, you know, people have that in mind. People are concerned. So that just this 100-gallon spill that was quickly cleaned up and reported to the Department of Environmental Conservation as it was supposed to be, just fuels, no pun intended, the angst that people have in the capital region about all this oil coming through.
Are we the only entry point? Meaning if the crude is coming from North Dakota to get it down the river, are we pretty much, is the Port of Albany the only entry point?
It's a good path. There are other paths, including coming in near Newburgh, they're looking at.
Yep.
And I suspect there's probably others maybe south of New York State. But the existing freight lines are available, and it's become a really major thoroughfare now that, this crude oil has a market.
Now, obviously, it doesn't stop with the 100 gallons of oil. We knew it was going to happen. We're lucky it happened with only 100 gallons that didn't get into the river, that people were responsive, that the engineers did their jobs. All that's good. But every day here at WAMC, we're getting mail about the pipelines and the pipelines that are going to destroy people's habitats, go through the, and then we're hearing about fracking. And so our gluttonous need for oil is there. And then, of course, some of our very good environmental friends are saying, hey, this doesn't need to happen. We can put a solar facility on everybody's house. We can do a Marshall-type plan, and we can do all of that. I am dubious about whether you can do that overnight. You know,
takes a long-term commitment to do that.
But we are seeing, Mike, the tension here between the need for oil and the lack of safety in doing all of these things, whether it's a pipeline, whether it's an Albany facility. And then we're also seeing, in terms of the potential degradation of the environment, we're also seeing that these facilities tend to be put in where people who have the least are situated. And so you sort of have this environmental mess with people who are poor.
Well, last week in the New York Times, Henry Paulson, a big Republican, I guess, who had ran the Treasury in the last administration, came out with a strong argument for imposing a carbon tax to you know, basically tax all the producers and all the users of fossil fuels, and to return that money that's raised from that to people so that they can develop more rapidly, you know, alternative, cleaner forms of energy, such
but it's
as
still, but,
solar.
But Mike, it's still the redistributive politics. Because,
oh, yeah. Oh,
because
yeah.
the day that Paulson puts that carbon tax on, or they put the carbon tax on,
well,
that goes right to our bills, right?
And right, so right. But you would get rebates to compensate you for that. And industry would be the one who would be motivated to then move to cleaner forms of producing power. Like,
not necessarily.
Yeah. Well,
not,
I mean, that's the way that he would describe it.
Yeah,
working.
Well, I hear what he said. I read the piece. It was good. But, you know, obviously it comes to us now. They're not going to absorb that cost. They're going to put it on your bill. And then so they're taxing you to help you.
They're taxing you to help you, but there would be rebates so that you could pay that additional amount on your bill. This is under the plan that was outlined by Chairman Paulson. Yeah. Or Treasury, former Treasury head Paulson.
Yes, and as you say, suggest a guy who really is close to the levers of power,
sure.
And the corporate world in the United States. And you know, I often think about people who, at the end of their careers,
right.
think
they
about
take a step back and look back at what happened,
and, or look up and wonder if they're going there.
That's all true.
Or look
well. There's very little chance today that any carbon tax would make it through Congress. It's very difficult. Congress is there's many, you know, people who don't believe that global warming is happening, and they feel like
how do you know they don't believe it?
Well,
I think they believe it, but are even more scandalous than that. They believe it, they know it, but they know where the constituencies are, and they're playing to them.
Well, they portray it as disbelief and doubting science, that scientific evidence that global warming is here and happening. And that makes it very difficult to get things through. And it also is expensive to respond to the issues of global warming. And, you know, it's the debate we've talked about many times, obviously. But, you know, on a much more local level, Global Partners wants to expand, you know, their use of the Port of Albany to bring this crude in from North Dakota. You get into these philosophical arguments. Oil is probably better than coal, and there's an awful lot of coal being burned in the United States, polluting the air and causing more atmospheric problems. And then, you know, maybe, you know, gas is probably less problematic than oil. And but to mine more gas, you could destroy the water supply. You know,
yeah, no, that's right.
And in the end, really, the clean forms of energy, electricity through solar power, through wind power, through more hydro, you know, those seem to make the most sense.
Well, yes and no, but I mean, over in Massachusetts, where I live, good state, there
was the
Commonwealth. Yeah, good state. It was a state of a Commonwealth. You know, there have been proposals to put some wind power up, and people object about that because they don't like the birds, they think it'll affect your mental health, you know, things like that. So there's always going to be pushback.
And nuclear, same way? There's always pushback there?
Well, but in some cases, like in nuclear, we know that we have no place to put the spent fuel. Right?
Right.
That's a big issue.
We kick that down the road. Kick that can down the road a few hundred thousand years, and everything will be fine.
You have some letters?
Oh, yeah, letters. We get letters. I'm getting them right as we speak. Come on, phone. Just a quick note on NAFTA, guys. It was never meant to improve the economies of South and Central American countries. It was meant to give more market space to big corporations. As an historian, As a historian, I have to tell you that the U.S. is rarely successful in aiding our friends to the South, mainly because there's not the real goal. That is not the real goal of the U.S. The goal is to open up new markets for big business, nothing more. The war on drugs is a great example, especially in places like Colombia. Okay, and there was that one. And
which had a great couple of goals the other night to beat Uruguay.
Yes, doing very well.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, I'm looking for some. Okay, and then Michael writes, let's not forget that human trafficking is a business. The current pathway to freedom policy opens up a new market for the Mexican coyotes to exploit as the Mexican market is dwindling. And that's from Mike in Albany. And then we have heard from Tom, who says, fix the economy of Honduras is a fine idea, but it's much too vague to be actionable. One of the major reasons for the influx of miners is intensified drug conflict in Central American countries. Drug prohibition is an utterly ineffective policy for ending drug abuse in the U.S. Adopting a common-sense approach by replacing prohibition would save blood, tears, and money in all parts of Central and South America by taking money out of the violent underground economy. And then Maureen writes, gentlemen, I've understood the narco-traffickers are threatening school children and pressing them into gangs. Will you address the reason for the upsurge in migration? It touches on our responsibility for controlling drug abuse, and that's from Maureen. And I guess that's it.
Yes? That is indeed it. Okay. That's perfect, because we're out of time.
Oh,
so my thanks to everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow. Alan, Mike, Ray, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joseph.
Roundtable at WAMC.org.